I just very quickly realized that that was one of the big things. He didn't have the sense of urgency, didn't communicate very well. Some of like the big qualities I think you need as a production manager. So I think after three weeks or a month, we decided to move on from him.
Hey, look, we were just playing with some AI stuff. That's a little bit scary good in a way because of some of the new updates that ChatGPT has, which we'll talk about towards the end of this episode. But this episode is awesome. Why? Because we have Billy on the show again, our three-part series on finding a great production manager, Billy McDevitt. He's at B&E Sportswear out of Pennsylvania, and he's found a production manager that sticks now. So this is the third try's the charm. And we're going to find out why, though. What changed in the hiring process, the training process? What red flags did he look for so that he could help find this person and someone that's really helping him so he doesn't have to think about it? And he's done a pretty good job. He's even left the shop for a few hours at a time. I don't know how far he's gotten away from it. He said he went home. I think he sat in his car, but it's a start. So,
all right. This podcast would not be possible without our amazing sponsors. First and foremost, Graphic Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, hit up Graphic Source. They offer industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management softwares, and they're now on Slack. When it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, there's no better company in our industry to work with. They have over 40 years in the game, and they really know and understand shop needs. Hit them up, graphicsource.com. Tell them you got this from the podcast. You'll get 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. No more Skype.
Because Skype's closed. DGIapparel.com. It's free, and it is one of the best new software platforms to hit the industry. It's called DGI Apparel. It's built by MIT engineers with a background in screen printing. It connects all of your accounts, Sanmar, Alpha, SNS, and so on, and you can compare prices, inventory, ship times across all the suppliers in one website. Really easy to use, adds everything to the cart, and then boom, you can go to them to purchase. It just saves a lot of time purchasing, and they have a really great new beta that connects directly to Printavo to make this process even faster. And what?
Do you know what you can buy on DGI Apparel now?
What?
Multicraft.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
They just released it the other day. You can go to DGI and you can buy Multicraft products straight from there now. Daddy's okay, on DGI.
I'm going to pass it off to you then. DGIapparel.com. It's free to use. Join 1,500 shops, saving time and money on their purchasing.
Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy?
Who dat?
If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo podcast, you'll get an extra 10% off your order. Dave's due for some good old dad vids. He hasn't made one in a minute, but it's summer, so I'm sure he's going to get back on his content game. Dave gives away supplies on every episode. You can simply DM him, and he gives away like case of PMI tape, and this is for new customers only. So DM him, subscribe to the podcast, follow PMI tape, leave a nice comment for Dave, and he will pick a new customer out each week. Thanks so much, Multicraft. We love you.
Easy way. If you're spending hours cleaning screens, that is a thing of the past. Welcome to Easy Way's screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals. They've got innovative formulas and are designed to work quickly and effectively so you can spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Not only that, Easy Way is an awesome company and they really help you just succeed. They've got tons of tips. They've got tons of documentation. They've got tons of resources on their website, easyway.com. Plus their team is there to be able to help. So printers of all levels, feel free to reach out. They are great. Thanks, Easy Way. And now let's jump into the episode. Billy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
What have you been up to?
Just same old stuff. I'm in a little bit better of a spot than I think the last time I spoke to you guys, which was, I mean, it feels like it was a couple of years ago now, at least a year. But definitely in a better spot. Things are things are going well.
That's exciting.
I think last time we talked, Billy, you were in the middle of like hiring a production manager. Tell us, give us a quick update of the business. Yeah.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about where you're at now.
Well, read this text too. So Steve and I were talking about you as we had two other episodes with Billy and on his journey of finding someone to manage production. And you guys can click the links down below. We'll have those to share. But says, hey, Billy, you ever get a production manager to stick? And you go, yeah, we actually did. Our manager has been with us for about 18 months now. And he worked at BSN for a while before coming to us. So he had some background in industry. So that was helpful. So that was an immediate, hey, we got to see what's going on and see how you've been.
Yeah. So I guess the last time I spoke to you guys, we had hired somebody. And it was one of those situations where 2 weeks in, I just realized, I said, this is not going to work. It's just, he's just not going to. He's just didn't have the biggest thing was he didn't have a sense of urgency about really anything that he was doing, which I was surprised by. And I didn't get that vibe during the interview process. But there's just some things that you don't figure out until you have them in the job and they start working. And I just very quickly realized that that was one of the big things. He didn't have the sense of urgency, didn't communicate very well. Some of like the big qualities I think you need as a production manager. So I think after three weeks or a month, we decided to move on from him, which was a challenge to deal with, but I just didn't see it going anywhere. And looking back, it was the right decision. And we thankfully, maybe 4 or 5 months later, we met Josh, our production manager now. He had worked at a company called Kelly Sports, which is near us, but had gotten purchased by BSN probably around 2020, maybe a little bit before. And he worked with BSN for a while, and then they were closing that production facility. So it was sort of a perfect timing for us. And him having that background in the industry and already understanding what we did was huge and really cut out a lot of the training time that we were expecting to have. So we brought him on, and he's been with us.
So Billy, when you let that one guy go, it took you 4 months to fill that new role. Did you kind of give up on hiring for a little bit? Or were you actively looking like the second you let him go, like you started the job search?
Yeah, no, we continued to look. I think that was in June, end of June maybe. And we were still hoping to try and find somebody before we got into the fall, because summer's a little slower for us, and then fall through the end of the year is very busy like most other places. So we continue to look, but we really sort of changed what we were doing. I think I spoke to you guys after we parted ways with the other guy, and we sort of just restructured how we were hiring. And I think we were sort of hiring out of desperation, like, oh, well, this guy's a pretty good candidate. Let's just get him in there and see what happens. And yeah, we just decide that.
We all fall for that, though.
Yeah, it's probably not the way to go.
It's hard. You get desperate. You know, yeah. you really need the role. Maybe didn't work out before. You're just like, I think he's good enough. And maybe when we say to ourselves, like, good enough, it's huge red flag.
Yeah, for sure. And even like my girlfriend works in HR. I was talking to her about it, and she sort of gave me like a new outlook on how to hire and what to look for. So that was really helpful. So we really just changed things, and we're like, we're not just going to hire somebody to hire somebody, because we're going to end up wasting more time. And we just got to wait for somebody that we feel really comfortable with. And thankfully we found that.
Steven, do you think, you mentioned not having a sense of urgency was the last guy had that. Do you think that that is trainable, or is it, you either have it or you don't?
You either run hot or you run cold. Like,
you're either a diesel boy or a regular gas boy.
Yeah, like, we don't do E85 here, right? Like, this ain't no Prius. I just feel like once you see that they're slower, it's so hard to unsee.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you. Like, our production manager now, Josh, he's a pretty laid back guy. And I think even coming from where he was working at before BSN, I don't know this for a fact. I don't think they have the biggest emphasis on getting things out the door quickly and speed. You know, they're really such a like sales organization, and production's almost second for them. So we sort of had to instill that in him. Like we are trying to get things out as quickly as possible. And we're more operating. The customer's telling us when they need it. We're not telling them, oh, hey, it's going to be 3 weeks and it is what it is. So we're sort of bending over backwards for our customers to try and keep things moving along. So I think that was even an adjustment for him, understanding that, you know, we don't really say no to a whole lot of customers, and we have certain customers that will say yes to really anything because of, you know, the volume they do with us and their loyalty. So,
but I'm assuming you had that same talk with the second guy, right? Where, hey, look, we're trying to get stuff out the door, like, but repeated, but different person. Was that just not received? And that's where you knew.
Yes. Yeah. Are you referring to the person that we let go? Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty much like immediately I asked him to do something, or we had an order that had to get done and it didn't get done. And then like the same thing happened again. And I think the biggest thing too, it wasn't a busy time for us. So it was like, man, what are we going to do when we're really busy in the fall? If he's not even able to handle these things in the summer. So I think our new guys had the same sort of had a laid back mentality, but he's definitely picked it up and understands where we're coming from now.
I think in order to test for it, my business partner, Jed, he works in manufacturing and other businesses. And a lot of times he'll do like a ride along with an employee. And some things he'll tell me is like, I'm just seeing like, do they get out of the car quickly? Are they going to go open the door? Are they like mosey? Am I walking faster than them? Right. And so like sometimes he'll be like, come on, keep up with me. You know,
wait, and it's, you mean like, a physical, we're going to the store? What do you mean?
Yeah, like when he's trying to hire employees, he'll like take them out to lunch and just like see them like follow me through the place. Like, you know, like how do they go and open the door?
Are they decisive, like, about ordering or something? Or?
Yeah, like, hey, fold this shirt real quick. Like, do they work fast? Do they work slow? Do they try to work fast, but they might not get it right? You know, like my business partner, Jed, he works super fast, and he'll be like, come on, let's go. Right. And so I think it's something you can test for, at least train a little bit. What else, Billy, were you interviewing for the second time around? Like, what were your red flags? Like, how was the interview process, knowing that you kind of botched it the first time?
Sure. I think the industry experience in my mind cut down like 2 months of training. I mean, he had such a good understanding of all of that. I'd say that was like definitely the biggest one. And I think we got lucky on that. I was not expecting to find that. Josh also had experience managing people and doing reviews with employees on like a quarterly basis. So that was a big thing that we're still trying to work on doing more regularly. But the fact that he had experience with that and directly managing people, because that was another issue that we had dealt with. I'd say those were the two big things. Honestly, he just seems like a really good person. And his referrals were really strong. I think, you know, referrals can be kind of hit or miss, but his referrals were sort of glowing about him, which I think when you get it, just, oh, he was fine, that sort of tells you everything you need to know. But when they're really endorsing him, that says a lot.
What was the interview process though? And you specifically said your girlfriend is in HR and she had some good tips. So like what's like the most optimized production manager interview process now that you'll use going forward?
I mean, I don't know if we have it perfect, but I think we had him come in for a half day, which was big. And
this is the first, or did you phone screen?
So first thing, we did a phone screen. I talked to him on the phone. Then he came into the office and I met him in person and showed him.
Wait, and sorry, Billy, what did you ask him on the phone? I think some of these questions are like good for picking those red flags to peel someone off soon.
Yeah. I have to go back and I have a file of what I sort of asked and the process that I followed. But I can't remember any of the exact questions off the top of my head. The first phone screen, it wasn't anything specific. Like, it's just trying to get a sense of you know, can they, honestly, it's like, can they hold a conversation? Are they a normal person that we would want to work with? That's what I sort of use the first phone screen for. And once I nailed that down, it's bringing them into the office and making sure that this is a place that they could, you know, potentially see themselves working, walking them through that. And then the last thing after that, if, you know, all went well and both sides were good, we brought him in for a half day. And I really just had him follow me around, since I was the acting production manager, and explaining what I was doing, explaining what I was checking on, why I was moving things on the schedule, really taking him through what a day in his life would be if he were to work here. So those were sort of the three big things that we were able to.
I want to harp on the, like, are they a good person? Would we mind hanging out with them? Do they seem like a cool or normal individual? I've had a couple hires where the employees will be like, okay, they're a little weird, but they're going to be awesome. And sure enough, like, they start and a little weird turned into a lot of weird. And so much so, like, no one wanted to sit out there with them. And I'm just like, okay, like, if you can't take them out, if you don't want to go have a meal with them after work or go get lunch with them, like, they cannot work here. You know, I think that's such an important thing of, like, hiring desperately. Like, they need to be a good character fit. But I'm curious, did you have a job description written out for him of what your expectations were? Like, hey, these are the things that I'm going to need you to do.
Yeah, we did. We did. And I think that was one of our failures at the beginning. We had a job description written up for it, but it wasn't as detailed as it probably needed to be for this type of position. That was another thing we did for hiring the guy.
What do you mean by, like, as detailed as, like, what do you remember what you added more of?
I think we just, everything in the first one was just surface level. And I think it was like, you know, managing the production schedule, like, that's all it was. And then the second one was something like managing the production schedule, checking in with customers on due dates, collaborating with salespeople on the production schedule. It's just a bit more about how you go about that, so that there wasn't any confusion about what's expected of them or how he's supposed to go about that. So just more detailed of some of the tasks. I don't think we necessarily added or took anything away. It was just being a bit more thorough about how those things were expected to be done.
There's a really good book called High Output Management. I don't know if any of you have read it before, but it thinks of a job description as results. So these are the results or the outcomes that I want. And then based on those results, you can measure against them. And so your job description actually turns into your performance review. And there's a really cool template. If anyone emails me, I'll send it to them. But Bruce, I'm curious, like, when you were hiring at Printavo, the more mature you became as a hiring manager, what did you start to do differently, whether it was like their JDs or their reviews or like making sure they truly understood the role?
I think that's a great point on fleshing out more of the job description. I think sometimes we get in this, I got into an idealistic of what I wanted this role to be like in the future. And it was actually, I shifted it all to what are the problems I'm solving for today? And then tailored the description and the interview questions around literally the problems I'm having now. So if it was sales, it was like, you know, look, I have these leads coming in. And I don't think that we're optimizing them for, like, we're not converting enough of them to sales. What would you do? Like, if you're just very open-ended, how do you take these and can close them to sales? Like, what ideas do you have to bring to the table on that? And that allowed the conversation to get a little bit more conversational versus being like just a one way, like yes or no type question. Have you done, like, which is just, you don't get anything back from there. The other thing that I did over time was I pushed people on their answers. So if they said, why do you, you know, if I said, hey, we just did a mock sales interview and you didn't ask me, you know, for my phone number and my email to follow up later, like, why? And people will either get defensive and boom, red flag, you know, like red card, you're out. Or they answer it and like, you know, that's a great point. Let me, I should definitely do that on the next time. Right. Oh, okay, great. So they have some self-awareness and curiosity. Great. That's green flag. And then the last thing we did was, like, you guys have the in-person trial. We did that, but with projects. So, you know, I don't know, maybe like more of an artist. They don't, I don't know if they need to be, like an in-person run and working with people, maybe, but you know, okay, some sort of take-home assignment. That's exactly what we would do. Here's the instructions. Let me know if you have questions. And some people just bare bones do it, and others you could tell they spent like, I'll say, oh, just spend like 20, 30 minutes on this. Some people you could tell they spent an hour and a half on it, 2 hours on it. And that's a great green flag for me to help sift out. But I will say, like, it's still a probability chance. I'm trying to get my probability up to 80, 90% and reduce the risk, versus like a gambling on a 30, 40% potential hire.
Billy, I'm curious, did you test for like, how can they use Excel and like spreadsheets, or did you just like take their word for it?
I sort of took their word for it. Now he's younger. Like, I believe he's 33 or 34. So I think the younger they are, the more tech savvy you would expect them to be. And even just in that trial day, I had him on a computer sort of following along with what I did. And seeing how he navigated through Printavo and the power scheduler, I could just tell. I was like, okay, so he's able to pick things up pretty quick. He's able to use a computer well, and that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, I don't. When people say they're Microsoft Word proficient on a resume, we'll just give them a spreadsheet and say, like, can you just add these numbers up for us? And more often than not, they can't.
I've, like, really? Been, a simple yes. question like that?
Yeah, just like, hey, can you, because they put in there, like, I know how to use Microsoft Office or whatever. And you're like, okay, great. It's like, open up Google Sheets and can you just like alphabetize that list or like add up these numbers? And I just want to see, like, can they do it or not? And a lot of times they'll be like, it's been a while since I've used Excel. And you're like, okay, you know, but those are the things that, like, imagine you were sorting a bunch of sizes and names and they couldn't do that. And you have to sit there and be like, that's how you sort names. That's how you sort the sizes. Like, how often are we just like doing names and numbers or something silly? And we like need to use a spreadsheet. But if you don't ask those in the interview, like, you'll never know. I'm curious, like, what are those other things that are non-negotiables? We said urgency, right? Like, if they can't use the tech they say they're going to use, what would the other ones be?
I mean, definitely organized. You know, if you're going to be making sure everything gets done on time and due dates.
How do you test for that, though?
See, that's the thing. Like, that's sort of what we started to find with this specific position. There were so many of these skills that we were looking for that were going to be difficult to test. And you know, we found that the most revealing test was bringing them in for that half a day. And it didn't uncover everything, but that uncovers a lot of what we're looking for. But yeah, organized is a difficult one to test. It's one of those ones that you figure out when they start working, which is not.
I mean, you could give them a stack of shirts and say, fold these and put them in sizes, and you can see how messy their stacks are. You know, like Chad, our production manager, like, he has the best handwriting as a dude, and you're like, okay. You take your time to make sure things look good.
Check in.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, he has really good handwriting. And like, I don't know, if someone has super messy handwriting or they're just like sloppy, yeah. I think there's something to be said there.
That's one of the things we did. Like, we just had him, I had him stand at the end of the dryer for like 15 minutes on that trial day. And then I had him unload shirts for 15 minutes. Like, two pretty simple tasks that if he was struggling to do would have been, again, red flag or...
Wait, what else did you have him do that so that half day? So stand at the end of the dryer, grab shirts, stack them.
Yeah, those were the two things. I think we had him receive in a box from UPS that came from Sam or whatever. We just explained to him real quick, you know, double check the sizes, make sure everything's here. And this is how you check it in. That's another one of the things we had. And then I had him, like, I gave him a list of jobs on the schedule. I said, hey, I want you to move these move this to Wednesday, this to Thursday. So I had him physically moving jobs on the schedule just to make sure he understood how it worked and was paying attention to what I was doing. And then I went back and just made sure he did it. So a lot of simple stuff. I think it uncovered a lot. And again, they're simple things, but any of those things that he would, if he were to struggle with, would have been a bit of a warning to us that maybe he's not as good a fit as we think he is.
I'm going to throw one out there. Are they a smoker?
No, no, they're not. No.
You know, what's funny is I've had some hires and they go in their interview and then all of a sudden their first day and I'm like, oh crap, they're going to take a cigarette break every hour and a half. Like, damn it. Bruce, doesn't happen in software.
You did have people that take out, but it wasn't that often, fortunately. Maybe they got lucky.
It was so annoying. It annoyed everybody. Didn't even realize it, right? I don't know, just little things like that. Okay, so he starts. What's his first day, week, 30 days look like? Your relationship with him, walk us through what that first, you know, onboarding actually looks like.
Sure. So for the first, I think for the first 5 or 6 months, we shared an office. So we sat in the same office together, and that was more of a product that we just didn't have anywhere else to put him at the time. But I think it was like a really great way to train him. Again, for that probably first, I'd say probably the first 30 days, I'm still doing a lot of the tasks and he's following me and doing a lot of them. And one big thing that I should say that on the trial day that he did, that was a big green flag, I guess, he was taking notes. Like that's a huge thing with a lot of hires we have that they're just set. Yep. Yep. Okay.
You mean he brought in a notebook or you gave him one and then he started using it?
I didn't give him. He just asked for like a piece of paper. And he said,
bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. That's a thing.
That's a good idea. And even just here's a notebook. If you want to write something down, see if they actually use it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I specifically didn't. I was like, I'm not going to say anything because that was another issue. Was our past guy. I just didn't take any notes. So I knew he wasn't retaining everything I was saying. So that was the first probably 30 days was me showing him and he took a ton of notes. And then from there, we sort of just transitioned. I would just say, hey, I'd like you to go in and set the production schedule for the next 3 days, go through, set it, and then we're going to go back and look through it. And we go back and look through it. And we sort of just did that process for probably another 30 days or so of, I would just give him more and more sort of things to do with the schedule in terms of setting it. And, I had one, this is something that Steven challenged me to do. I would leave for half the day. I only did this like once or twice, but I'd leave and I'd say, hey, all right, I'm going to leave.
Where'd you go?
I think I just went home. I just went home and I would just, you know, work from home.
You just like go to the driveway.
It was easier to do in the summer because again, we're not as busy. But it was a good practice. Like this is, Steven was talking about having an end goal in mind. The end goal is that I am able to sit in my office for the entire day and I don't necessarily have to worry about if everything's going to get done. You're going to make sure everything gets done in the back and everything gets where it has to be. That was really our end goal that we're working towards. And
how long did that take? Are you there?
We're there.
That feels like one of those mentally addicting things of checking on.
Yeah. I mean, we're there. Like we'll still have times where, he just needs an additional set of hands, which is, it's not his fault. We just need an extra set of hands and I may have to jump back there and help. But I'd say we're there for the most part. And I'm not necessarily worried. I still check on certain things like in the background. I won't necessarily check with him, but I'll make sure, you know, something was ordered or something's here or it's on the schedule. But not a whole lot that I have to say, hey, this isn't on the schedule. I need you to put it on. We talked about this last week. Like that really doesn't happen. If that happens, it's my fault because I didn't tell.
So when you're hiring a new employee, I'll always say like, teach as you ought, not as you did, right? Like, did you use that opportunity to like write out SOPs or like level up his role? Like, you know, we didn't track this, but now you're tracking that. Like, Did you find new things that would be valuable to you in the company now that he was dedicated to that role?
Yeah, like we didn't track any of our production. Like, had no idea how many pieces we were printing per day or impressions or anything like that. And he now keeps track of that and he fills it out every week. So we're able to see, the real production that we're doing in it. That's helped us a little bit with our pricing. Like, we've kind of gone and looked back and again, figuring out exactly how long certain jobs take us. And then, from there, what they really cost us to do. So that's definitely helped us. And that wasn't something that I had the time to go back and do every week before.
Your prices you felt were low because of that, or you felt there was a good margin in it?
I didn't feel like there was anything wrong with our prices, but my dad, our price list he got, 40 years ago when he started, he just pulled it from somebody else and used that and sort of just increased it incrementally, but there was never
the same ever since.
Yeah. Not quite, but yeah, there was never like, hey, here are our costs. This is what it costs us to print 100 shirts or whatever. So we kind of went back and looked at that and realized there wasn't really anything wrong with our pricing. We were about, where we needed to be. Some small tweaks, but that what I say is probably the biggest thing.
Owners of a company will not consistently track. Employees are the ones that will actually track, and it's sometimes not very fun. But once we started tracking things in our production facility, labor rates, like daily production logs, I bet you that employee paid for themselves just by having like the conscious, having that awareness of all of these different metrics. And so like, it's one of those things where a good manager that's tracking things will pay themselves off probably just by like cost savings and efficiency, I feel like. So that's interesting. I'm curious, what about you, right? So like, you were kind of front of house, back of house, doing everything. What is your day-to-day look like? Are you still in there every day? Like, yeah, what's your world like?
Yeah, I'm definitely still in here every day. And I'm, definitely doing more sales than I was when we hired him. Our issue now is, again, thankfully, we have a ton of repeat business and a lot of inbound customers. So that is a lot of what I deal with. And we are not so much doing a lot of outbound and trying to find the new customers. So that's sort of my next challenge that I'm tackling, is we're trying to hire another salesperson that can focus on more of the outbound sales. Cause that's something that I do it in January and February when I have the time, and then I don't do it till the summer. And then I do it a little bit in the summer and then not the rest of the year. So that's not exactly an effective way to continue to grow sales. So that's what I'm focusing on now. We're trying to hire.
Do you feel, and I remind us, Bill, like, do you own the company with your dad? Are you trying to buy it? What's the makeup again?
I don't own any of it right now. I'm beginning to buy in this year. My dad is starting to step away a bit more. He'll always work here in some capacity, but he's here less and less, and I'm more making a lot of the decisions. So yeah, right now I don't own any of it still. So my dad, but we're working towards that.
And what's your dad's role in the company now? Is he able to take a step back? Golf?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Last summer, I'd say it was the first time he really stepped back. And I think it was the first summer that we had the new production manager and we're comfortable with him. So I think he then felt comfortable stepping out of things and leaving it to just, myself to make a lot of those decisions. But yeah, I mean, now that the summer's here, he plays a ton of golf. So he's not here right now. He's out playing golf. So he's here 4 or 5 hours a day around there. And again, he has a few customers that he deals with. And yeah, he really enjoys being here. He's always loved what he does and talking to the customers and especially going out and seeing them. So he's doing a lot of that.
It's pretty cool that you have a great self-awareness about, okay, I'm full on this role. I need help here. And that you're able to, it sounds like, micromanage a bit less. Like for me, I was so passionate about product and customer interactions that's sort of the areas I micromanaged. And I think shop owners are maybe probably more customer interactions and production is their, passion. So they micromanage that a bit more too. So it seems like definitely a mental addiction to step back from a bit more.
I'm curious, Billy, how you, like with Bruce kind of saying like, okay, say you hire an employee or a manager, a lot of times the owner can't get out of the way and they end up like over micromanaging or over being like in the weeds. Do you have like a weekly one-on-one where the two of you sit down as like a team? Do you talk every day? What's your management style with him and what's your relationship like? Seems like something's working.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely talk every day. You know, I'm here every day, so we talk. We don't sit down weekly. It sort of just depends on what's going on. Like at the beginning of this week, actually on Monday, we sat down because one of our artists was out and we just had a ton of hard due dates this week. So we sat down and I said, all right, this is what I have that has to get done. Or are we on the same page here? So we'll sit down on our busier weeks and, you know, kind of put together a game plan and make sure we're all on the same page. But aside from that, I sort of just check in with him if he needs help with anything, where things stand. And we don't necessarily have those set meetings. It's sort of just depending on what's going on. And I think I just trust him more. You know, that those first 6 to 8 months, we were meeting probably almost weekly. We had more of a set meeting. And I'd say, hey, this is what I thought you did well last week. This is what maybe didn't go so well. But I just trust him a lot more now to be getting things done.
Steven, one thing you told me a long time ago that I really liked was just take random people out to lunch. And we got to maybe at that point there was 25, 26 people. And I mean, I had to eat. So I was like, hey, you know, Anthony, you want to go grab food? Or Kelly, you want to go grab food? And that was like a great way to have like a less, for me, it was like a less structured one-on-one thing that I got tired of over time and more of, yeah, chit chat, catch up, build a little personal connection, and then also talk about their role and anything else I could help with. But
do you do that, Billy, where like you'll just take them out to lunch or any, just like try to get away from the shop at all? Or
not
do you
really
owe him lunch? Okay,
no,
you owe him lunch.
No, not
you should
really
go take him to lunch.
Should no, we don't really do those kind of things. But I mean, we definitely will talk about
that. We already do the food thing.
I don't want to sound like a jerk, but I mean, we definitely talk about a lot of things outside of work, just like in our daily communications. So I think that's a good way. I try to do that with a lot of our employees, just so we're not always talking about work, try to get to know them on a different level. I think that's just a good thing to do in general.
Yeah. Jed, my business partner, he's got a rewards card at Chili's for free chips. And so like, he just takes employees. He's like, come on, we're going to Chili's. Come on, we're going to Chili's. He just takes different people out. And so it's like, where's Myla? She's at Chili's with Jed. Like, oh, where are the girls up there at Chili's with Jed? And so like, but like, that's how he can relate to them and communicate with them. And like, I don't know. I think that's super, super important. So maybe owe your production manager some lunch, some Chili's.
Yeah. Maybe.
I'm curious, Billy, what is your thought process? You said that you wanted to hire the next role. You think you wanted to hire someone to manage outbound so that you can consistently do that. How do you think about wanting someone instead to take over your sales role that you're doing? So handling inbound and repeat orders, and then you starting to hunt on the outbound side to get that process down. And I don't think there's a right or wrong. I'm just curious on why that one versus the other one.
So we sort of started to look for both and are seeing what came up. And we just found basically what it came down to is in the inbound scenario, the repeat orders, the salary that we are offering was not getting a ton of hits. We were getting a lot of kickback on that. So we said, well, the outbound is going to be sort of a similar salary, but you have this chance to earn commission. So we're finding much more qualified candidates with that approach to things. So that's really kind of where we came up with looking for that as opposed to somebody to handle the inbound. And we just hired a new receptionist, and we're sort of training her to do a little bit of that as well, to how to enter orders. That's really what we're working on now, but hoping to work towards her being able to handle the person who just needs 50 t-shirts for the graduation.
Do you think the repeat or inbound you wouldn't want to do commission for?
Probably not. I mean, that's just my view. I mean, I think if you do any commission, it's a very small amount. But yeah, I think that's just my view on it. I just think it's such a different process and obviously a different skill set and all of that we hadn't really thought about giving commission for any of the inbound. Do you guys have a different thought?
No, I think like inbound, like you said, like they're just more of like servicing the customer that's coming in. And so like, it might be like a small quarterly or something tiny. But no, I'm with you there. I think that aligns totally. And I think that's what Kevin teaches mostly. I want to switch gears for a second. Can we, Bruce, you got anything else for Billy? Billy, how are you using AI in your company? I'm putting you on the spot.
I mean, the little amount of outbound sales that I do, I will punch into AI or, you know, whatever AI tool I'm using. Just sort of the prompt, you know, hey, I'm reaching out to this construction company, trying to sell them apparel. They're located wherever. Please put together an email. And I'll just use that as a starting point. And then I'll go from there sort of editing it. Because a lot of the outbound stuff that I send out, I try to just make it a lot more personalized as opposed to just putting together this template and sending it out to 50 different companies. So that's probably the way that I use it. I think that's the only way that I can think of that I'm currently using it.
Bruce, how are you using it every day?
I personally use it for a lot of data crunching. Any question I have about data or information, I'll upload the CSV file into ChatGPT and ask it to, you know, and it's not always perfect. I mean, you definitely have to like jigger things around to get it there, but that is number one. And then number two for me is anything that I would potentially Google, I will just go straight to it. And I just have it on my home screen on the phone and it saves me a lot of time that way. What about you? Is this a trick question? Do you just have some bomb?
I'm just curious. So ChatGPT just released 4.0 and now they understand, now it understands text and type. And so I've been on a mission to try and get my employees to embrace it and adopt it. And for some happens overnight, for others, they fight it. And so, it's been something that I've been trying to work on is like, how do I get, you know, my team behind it? And so I was on ChatGPT yesterday and they actually have a GPT you can explore called Therapist Psychologist and it's fictional. So I clicked on it. You can just talk to it. It's like a fake therapist or a fake like psychologist.
A fake one. Okay. I thought you meant it's like a fantasy.
It says, no, that's you. That's you. Bruce's 50 Shades of Grey shit. So I said, hi, my Gen Z employees won't use AI for art and it's making me mad. And so it came back and it said, let's dive into the situation and the reluctance. And it's like understanding the reluctance, like, it might be job security, ethical creative integrity, a lack of clear guidance. You know, like to bridge the gap, you should have open dialogue, a training program, policy development. And then it asks me like, how has the situation impacted your perspective on leadership? And I just responded, I said, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir and it's lonely up here. And so it empathized with me a little bit. And then it said, would you like me to put an agenda together for a meeting that you can have with them and how to structure it? And it literally was like, ask, don't tell, validate their feelings, invite them in, don't push them, share your own fears. And it like even dialed it down of like, is this tone too serious? Do you want to make it more cheeky? And literally it like wrote out a meeting agenda for me to have like a hard meeting with my staff that I'm struggling with, and just kind of blew my mind. Just like bonkers that like it just guided me through that. I've been calling restaurants now and it's been like an AI agent answering. I just think as an industry beyond artwork, we either can like embrace it, try to use it, or like if we put it to the wayside, I feel like we're just going to get passed up a little bit.
Well, the new artwork you were showing was insane. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but this, you know, this update that can now spell and understand, you know, you can upload an example, ask it to change. I mean, how you've got some interesting prompts you guys were using.
Yeah. I mean, we just took like the Welcome to Chicago where they do like the silhouette of the city and like the letters, and we're like, change it to a different city with a different thing. And it like redrew it. Just nuts. But I'm curious, like on that note, do your employees bring up AI, Billy or Bruce? Like, do they show you ways that you can use it? Do you feel like you're more preaching to the choir on it? What position do you take as a leader in your company with AI?
I mean, I honestly have not talked about it a whole lot with our company at all. And if anybody's going to bring it up, it's going to be me. We, you know, thankfully, a lot of our employees, I'd say about half our employees have been with us for 12 to 13 years or more. So they do skew a little bit older, and I don't think they're too worried about AI in any capacity. And even our younger employees, it hasn't come up. So I just use it for my own personal use. We get a ton of customers that send us AI art now. So we definitely see a lot of our customers using it from the art side. But as far as us as a company, it's not something that we've really looked into a ton.
That's pretty crazy.
Well, isn't that a little scary?
Or is it good?
I mean, our artist likes it because he's like, oh man, that's an awesome design. And it takes out a lot of the him creating a design, sending it to them. They don't like, and then like back and forth, five different revisions. They just created something that they like. He just has to clean it up, make it print ready, and he's ready to go. So he likes it from that standpoint. I don't know if he's thought of it from the other side of it replacing him. I don't think he's thought about that, but I don't know if we're definitely not at that.
But point. I think that I wonder if that makes him like, he's just a better prompter into AI, as in like, okay, this customer wants this. They just want this changed. Okay. Awesome. I can write this up super quick in ChatGPT and be able to generate an incredible image or graphic that the customer will approve. Or here's three examples that I bang out real fast. And so then they're good to go.
The founder of Shopify put out a memo, and he made it public. Bruce, I'll send it to you.
Yeah,
he put out a memo.
I actually
have
it already pulled up.
Oh, and I printed it out and I put it in my Traction. I had a 4-hour meeting last week with my team of like, we have to be adopting this. We have to be using it every day. And if we're not, like, we're already a growing company, but if we don't start using it, we're going to actually start slipping backwards. And so like, I just think that if we're not careful, right? Like, you can order stickers now on ChatGPT, I think through Sticker Mule, which is kind of nuts. It's kind of scary a little bit.
I think two things that stood out to me. One, it's sort of the new, when you said Microsoft Word, you know, you need to come in. Look, if you're working in front office or you're working with customers, you have to know how to use Word and Excel, some of these basic tools, to a point where I'm not sure if you need it on your resume. It's just like, expected. Like, we probably aren't having much of a conversation if you haven't used Word much. And then two is, as in, people need to start using this regularly to bring to their career. And then two, any new role that he said that any new role that we want to be able to hire for, you need to prove that we can't have AI be able to do this instead of a person. So, you know, or can someone else use AI to help improve what they're doing that doesn't allow us, we don't need to hire that extra person. That I thought was pretty disruptive.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's not going to check in shirts for you, but right, like there's other things, there's data aggregating, there's like writing prompts for how to send cold emails, there's social campaigns,
level one support.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different things. And I think if companies are concerned about profitability and overhead and labor, put your employees through AI training. You know, I wonder if there's training courses out there, Bruce, that like you could put your staff through.
I'm sure there's some prompting. In my opinion, put the app ChatGPT downloaded, put it on your home screen. And just anytime you have a question, something you want to get feedback on, pop that thing open and just use, I mean, you end up using it 5 times a day.
Yeah. I'm maybe our employees, some of our employees use it, and I don't even know. they just use it for certain things throughout the day. And I'm not sure. So I'm definitely going to ask them to see if anybody is already taking advantage of it. And I'm just not aware.
I am on a kick right now. Like, I am on an AI bender a little bit. Everyone at Campus Inc. knows I'm probably going to bring it up 4 times a day. There's probably like a take a drink if you heard Steven talk about AI today. But I just think there's going to be a little bit of an adapt or die now that it's getting so much smarter. And Bruce, maybe we need to do another episode on AI agents, which are these new things coming out. Still watching some TikToks on them, so not super familiar. The fact that I use this to help me like manage my team and it actually like was really accurate, I was just like, oh wow, this is scary.
Steven, do you have anything that you're using AI for in your company currently, or are you just sort of messing around with it right now?
So like artists are using it to just do like idea generation. And then like our sales managers are trying to do it to be able to get concepts out to customers really quick from an artwork standpoint. But really probably the biggest parts are like data, just cleaning up data, just, you know, like we fed it like thousands of athlete like metrics to tell us like who we should be focusing on. We did an exercise last week with our e-commerce team and we fed it Facebook data, Instagram export, Shopify export, and email campaigns, and just like dumped it and said, like, couldn't you put this together and synthesize like us, like where our weak spots are? And sure enough, it was like, these posts are doing well and these emails are doing well. So maybe you should think about these products and these products. So like, I don't know, you just got to keep asking it different things.
Marketing team uses it to generate content for emails and then be able to customize it a bit and make it a little more personal. The same thing for blog posts. And then engineering is using it to speed things up with coding, at least on the software side. Super random, but if you so right now it knows. So everything that you've ever asked it, it like knows. So ask it, describe me based on all of our chats and make it catchy. Just see what happens that it writes. It's a little bit spooky because it knows so much about you. At least it does about me. And it was pretty accurate based on all the things based on what it prompted back to me. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's a little personal too. So I don't, yeah. All right, Billy, we appreciate you joining us. Billy McDevitt, the journey of finding a production manager. We love the episode. This is a 3-part series, by the way. So
hopefully it's
thank you
done
so
now.
Much.
Hopefully we don't have a 4th part.
But we appreciate you guys. Hey, pronouncers, you guys are awesome. Thanks for joining us on another episode this week. We'll see you again on the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.